Head to Subway for the tangy new Tuscan Chicken Melt. Seasoned chicken, melted cheese, and olive vinaigrette. With 9 grams of fat, it's part of a Subway Fresh Fit meal. A simpler way to enjoy eating better. Hurry in today. Subway. Eat fresh.
The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. Let's get right into it. We're going to call our buddy Jack out, diehard Yankee fan, on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. See how he's feeling as the Yankee season spirals into hell.
Complex Litigation, this is John.
Hey there, Johnny.
What's up, Willie?
How you doing?
I've been better.
I thought I'd call you for the podcast after every Chin Ming Wong loss.
Wow, really?
Which will be every 5 days from now until the end of September. What do you think?
Fantastic. That sounds good. Last night can't really be pinned on him now. I mean, he wasn't, you know, it wasn't lights out, but he wasn't awful either. They just, suddenly their offense is whatever being worse than anemic is pathetic.
Do you know what Chin Ming Wong means in Taiwanese?
Well, a Taiwanese is not really a language. I think it's like Chinese.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
It means Anthony Young. 0-13. Here he comes.
He could be well on his way. I know. It's terrible. It's awful. The team's just awful. I mean, the Sox can start resting people for the playoffs at this point.
Oh, stop.
Five
now
games.
Now you're trying to reverse jinx.
I mean, it's falling apart. 5 games, the Yankees can't score. They scored 15 runs or whatever it was like 10 days ago against Johan Santana. And since then, they've been either held to one run or outright shut out by these pathetic rookies from pathetic teams like the Nationals and the Marlins and now the Braves.
You know, if you hadn't gotten that ridiculous Luis Castillo win,
right,
it would have been five straight losses, 2 wins, 2 more losses, a win. You'd be like two of your last 12.
I know. It's that's really, I mean, that one was just a gift from the gods. I mean, that was just, you know, that should count as a loss, actually. Since they did everything to lose it, and should have, except for the biggest bonehead play ever.
Wait a second. Have we had a podcast since then? I don't think we have.
I don't think we have, no.
Did you watch that game?
I did not watch it live, no. I was hanging out with some friends, and I was monitoring things on my BlackBerry, but, you know, obviously watching it on the checking scores on the BlackBerry did not do it anywhere near the justice that it deserved to watch it live.
Right.
I know if I'd watched it live, I would have hurt myself because I would have slammed my hand down on the table when A-Rod hit that pop-up, and then I would have been extra mad at myself when it dropped and they won, because I would have gone from slamming my hand down on the table to doing a triumphant fist pump.
I think it should be a documentary, that entire at-bat.
It's really incredible. A-Rod goes to, like, slam his bat on the ground.
Yeah.
He knows it's over. But the whole time, you could, like, if you watch it now, and hindsight is always 20/20, but if you look at it now, like, he never looked right catching it. His feet were off, and you could just see, like, he had kind of a deer-in-the-headlights look about it from the get-go.
And then Teixeira running hard.
Yeah, I mean, what a good player Teixeira is. I mean, this is such a cliche, but he does the little things. Like, to know to run hard on that, I mean, how many guys would just lollygag that while cursing A-Rod under your breath as you ran to second base?
Yeah, and then, you know what else helped was Castillo trying to hold the runner at second while the other guy was running home. That was a good play. That guy at second base stayed, though.
Yeah,
that was smart.
Yeah, so that was an incredible win. And then they rough up Santana. I mean, just kill Santana.
Yeah.
And then you have the Washington Nationals rolling into town, and you're like, hey, this will be good. You know, this is 3 wins right here under our belt. Not so much.
Yeah, and then the Marlins.
And then the
who
Marlins.
Weren't even playing well, right?
You're rolling into the Marlins, and you're like, well, at least we can bounce back from that debacle of losing 2 out of 3 to the worst team since the 1962 Mets. And then they promptly lose 2 out of 3 in Florida.
I'm on the same page with you with Teixeira. I think, you know, I always had the Yankees on with the Red Sox. There was some secondary TVs, but he does do a lot of the little things. He's just a good player. He saves a run here and there all the time. His defense is really good.
He's good
at bats.
I mean, he's so great defensively, too. And the upgrade from Giambi to him, I mean, it's astronomical what a leap that was.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just such an enormous leap. So, and but he's just so good. He's, I mean, when they had that huge errorless streak for however many games it ended up being, 16, 17 games, a lot of them were because of him, because there was wide throws or throws in the dirt that he rescued.
Oh, yeah.
He's great. He's so good. He's great defensively and offensively.
He's your best player.
Yeah, I love him. He's my favorite Yankee since, well, I mean, I love Jeter, so it's hard to blaspheme, but I like Jeter, too, but he's right up there with Mattingly. He's getting into Mattingly territory, Teixeira, just because he's so good, just so solid.
Good job by him. Yeah, yeah. I got to say, I've been impressed by him because that first month it looked like he was just going to
right, and regular fold. Listeners of the podcast will know that I killed him in April, but I'd like to retract those remarks.
It looks like the Red Sox might pull away potentially.
Yeah, I think so. They're already five.
It's possible.
Already moved it up to five games. And they show no signs of slowing down. They do what good teams should do. They beat the hell out of the Washington Nationals. The Yankees screw around and lose by a run or score only one run. The Red Sox went out and put up an 11 spot on them. That's what you do to awful teams. You win against them. And then you battle against the good ones. But the Yankees can't even get out of their own way against the inept ones. It's ridiculous.
The bullpen is really coming through. It's a huge advantage.
The Red Sox.
Especially this season.
Oh, yeah, their bullpen is phenomenal.
Biggest advantage they have, other than the fact that they seem to wear starters down a little bit.
I mean,
a lot of pitches.
If you had told me in March or the beginning of April that the Red Sox would have to put Daisuke on the DL twice in a row for ineffectiveness, that Big Poppy would have six home runs and like 30 RBIs, and people would be salivating about it, I'd be happy about that. I would have taken that to the bank.
And Lester hasn't been good either.
And Lester hasn't been great. I'd have been like, fantastic. How big is the Yankees' lead going to be? Well, it turns out they lost every game to them this year, and they're five games out. So it's just unbelievable.
Well, what's interesting is they still have the trade to make, and possibly two trades, because I think they can get something for Saito. I think he's a closer.
He's a closer for
somebody.
On ESPN, there was some talk about from Gammons about they were talking about a Saito for Hank Blaylock trade.
Yeah, that didn't excite me too much.
No, that didn't take my luck.
I'd rather get somebody who is good in 2009 and not 2005.
Yeah, that's understandable.
But you know, maybe De La Rosa and not De La Rosa. God, I'm such a pronunciation.
De Rosa, the guy. De Rosa, the guy from Cleveland.
De Rosa,
Mark De Rosa. Isn't that his name?
It's De Rosa.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not who's De La Rosa?
Him, I don't know.
Isn't that a Jorge De La Rosa?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's Mark De Rosa.
Not to be confused with De La Hoya. He was a boxer.
Who's De La Rosa?
I don't know.
Jorge De La Rosa?
Wasn't he an
explorer? Yeah, Jorge De La Rosa.
I believe he founded the Missouri River, De La Rosa.
He's on the Rockies. The thing is, if I'm this bad now and I'm not 40, how bad am I going to be when I'm like 55? Am I going to end up being worse than Eddie Andelman? I'm going to be like, what about that Kevin McJohnson? What was his name? Robert Farish? But I think that guy makes a lot of sense. Although I got to say, Nick Green has been decent.
Solid.
I don't want to jinx it, but he's making plays.
He won a game for you on Sunday. When did he win a game for you? He went around Pesky's pole the other day against the Braves, right, on Sunday.
Yep.
Yeah, I know. And you still have, you guys are so good that you have Clay Buchholz, who's lighting up the International League, and you have no place to put him.
He might be like Phil Hughes, though. He's a quadruple-A pitcher.
He's a 4A player, yeah.
He's a 4A Cy Young winner. Just a little too good for AAA, and something's missing. Although Phil's been pretty good.
They should trade him while the buzz is high on him, though. The Sox ought to put him in a package with something.
Johnny, you're preaching the choir. I think they're just kind of it's one of those deals where they don't need to do anything.
Right.
And they're kind of waiting for other teams to get desperate, and they're waiting to make sure that they're going to be healthy for the long run. They're waiting to see what happens with Ortiz.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of biding time, and somehow they're up a couple games.
More than a couple now. Five games is solid. Wow, I wish the Yanks were up five games.
I was trying to understate it, but.
The Yanks are freaking... I just hope the Yanks can stay out of the third at this point.
You know what I'm very surprised by is the Tigers.
That they've kept at it?
Yeah, I just think they're good. They're playing well.
Yeah.
They look like... I just thought they were going to be depressing and everything that's going on in Detroit, and maybe the fans were going to show up. They'd have to start trading guys off. Ordóñez dropped to earth and went through it. but somehow still chugging along. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. They have a lot of like Ryan Rayburn. Who is that guy they had? They called up for a while. Cleet Thomas. A lot of those guys. I don't know how they're doing it. Brandon Inch has 17 homers.
It's pretty good.
They got Jeff Larish. They have all these random dudes.
A lot of guys you wouldn't be able to like pick out of a lineup.
Yeah, and Polanco's not hitting. Like you just.
And their name guys like. Dontrell Willis, they had to put him on the DL with anxiety or whatever he has, unfortunately. So, yeah, it's kind of smoke and mirrors.
They only have one guy who's having a good offensive season, Miguel Cabrera. I mean, Inge is hitting homers, but I guess actually I should say Inge is having a good season.
They have decent pitching, though, too, right?
Yeah, the pitching is
Verlander and that guy Porcello was hot.
Edwin Jackson.
Yeah,
that's been the
good
thing. And they have three really high average starters or high caliber starters. And then for whatever reason, Rodney's been like a decent closer,
which you could not have convinced me of before the season that he would be.
It's 14 saves, Johnny.
I like Jim Leland too. He's out there smoking butts. He's like an old time cranky baseball guy. You know, it's what you want. Too many eggheads and computers and everything. Just an old time baseball man, you know?
I'm with you.
Jimmy Leland smoking butts in the dugout, wearing a blue streak. That's what I want as a manager.
You know,
crusty old baseball guy.
You've seen almost every American League team now. I don't think I've watched one team and said, wow, those guys are good.
No,
it seems like everybody's got flaws.
I hate to say this, but the Sox are the class of the league. They are. They're just a model franchise. I hate that. You don't know how much it pains me to say that. I'd rather cut off my own limb than say this, but I can't deny it. They're solid. I mean, look what they've done. They follow a plan. They stick to it. I mean, it helps that they have the commissioner in their back pocket. That's good to have in their back. That's good to have in your arsenal, obviously. But bitterness aside, I mean, you can't argue with the results on the field they've had in the past 5 years. The world has turned upside down.
I'm ignoring every Red Sox commissioner comment you make from now on. I'm not even giving you a courtesy laugh. You know what's interesting? The Red Sox are 43-27. They're leading the American League by four games. They're plus 71s or five games. Or they have the best record in the American League. Nobody's within four games of them. They're plus 71 with runs. And only one other team is even within 28 runs of that. And it's Tampa Bay.
And, I mean, if you look at them on paper, they have, you know, Mike Lowell is on the downside. Veritek, who last year was a corpse. Big Poppy, who essentially this year is a corpse. I mean, they have good players, obviously, in Pedroia and Euclid and Bay. But, I mean, for them to be that dominant offensively is something that I had no faith in their lineup. I thought they'd miss Manny, and they haven't missed him one iota. So it's just insanity. I mean, obviously their pitching was going to be good and their bullpen was solid, but I figured their offense would be lacking and that they, like as I said earlier, they do the smart thing. They go out and put up an 11th spot on the worst team in baseball.
True or false? Tampa is plus 67 right now, four less than Boston.
I think that's true because I know they were very good offensively.
True or false? Tampa leading the American League in scoring.
That's also true.
And the National League. 402 runs for them so far.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible, too. Although
that's pretty good. They're almost at getting close to six a game.
If they hadn't lost Kazmir for an extended period, they'd be making a lot more noise.
Yeah, I don't feel like we've heard the last from them.
No, there's still a whole second half to be played.
Couldn't you see them rolling off like the 17 out of 18 streak?
Yeah, absolutely. The Yankees might end up in fourth place, my God, behind Toronto and Tampa.
Yeah, you'll be fine. You just got to, as long as CC doesn't keel over and have some sort of
heat stroke.
What happens to fat people?
Maybe a heat stroke. A little,
yeah, heat stroke. Heat stroke would be awesome. CC's bad. He has heat stroke. They had to wheel him off.
Yeah, that would not. It would not be awesome. I disagree.
I think that would be great.
No,
15-day DL heat stroke.
I disagree. I wouldn't find that so awesome.
The first pitcher ever to have heat stroke because of his weight during a baseball game. That didn't even happen to Rich Garces.
No. Well, he didn't. He wasn't a starter though. He was just in there for an inning or two, so he didn't have enough chance to get that hot.
Johnny, I wanted to talk to you about curses.
Because
I wrote the 6,000 word column about.
I read it. I'm halfway through. I had to take a break, but.
Sorry about that.
No, I'm kidding. No, about the Clippers, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I read that one. Yes.
So, you know. When the curse of Bambino happened.
Yeah, let me just say, when it's all laid out like that, the Clippers history, I mean, it's really like, I mean, it's bad. It's abysmal.
It's staggering. Yeah, it's staggering.
I mean, you kind of know in your mind that the Clippers are bad and Sterling is a horrific owner. Like, you kind of know that, just like you know things. But when you read it like that, it's stark and black and white for you. It's really amazing.
It's
I don't mean to laugh because I have no beef with the LA Clippers, but I mean it's really just. Literally, it's like the Seinfeld thing, George Costanza. If only they had done the complete opposite of everything that they did.
Yeah.
Like, they would be like a model franchise.
Well, I worked out the whole timeline thing. And, you know, I think we do this too much in sports when the team has a run of bad luck. We just say, oh, the curse. And we just look at, like, whatever the first thing that happened. And then we point to that as being the catalyst for the curse.
Right.
And that's what people did with the Red Sox. Like, they traded Babe Ruth, and that set off. But really, like, the curse of the Bambino never made sense because nobody was ever able to explain why Babe Ruth cursed the Red Sox.
Right. Well, it was the
best thing that ever happened to him to go to the New York. Like, he should be happy that that happened.
Yeah, but wasn't the genesis of it that he liked Boston and he wanted to play there? And didn't he, you know, very apocryphal, but that he supposedly said something about, oh, they'll never win without me or something because he was bitter. He liked Boston and he had a farm in Waltham or somewhere. He had a farm somewhere in Massachusetts and he was just used to it. He wasn't crazy about the trade at the time. Wasn't that the notion of it?
But I don't think that was true, though.
But then he went to New York and became, you know, the Bambino, and it was, you know, the roaring 20s and the speakeasies in New York, and it was huge for him. So I don't think later on in life he had any regrets about going to New York.
I mean, I always thought that he wanted to be a hitter. He wanted to make a lot of money. And they didn't have the money to pay him the biggest contract of baseball, and they traded him, and he was happy. He got to play in New York and do Babe Ruth things. Like, it really didn't work out bad for Babe Ruth.
No, it worked out well for him.
So when I was trying to figure out this Clipper thing, you know, in my opinion, if there's a curse, there has to be a real reason for a curse. I need some sort of catalyst, as I said, and that's when I realized that the Indian thing.
The Native American thing.
I started researching that, and I mean, you got to admit, that's pretty crazy that they decided to sell the team, and like a month later, that's when everything fell apart.
Yeah, the level of
futility. It's a little weird.
And the you know, you bring out a good point that they combined two things, the Buffalo, which was sacred to Native Americans, and then Braves. So really, it was really like a doubleheader for them. You know, it was like a double-headed curse. It makes sense. How else do you explain that 40 years of futility, the 30 years of futility?
In all seriousness, do you think they made somebody mad and they need to go and like do some sort of sacrifice?
Well, I think they should. Yeah, they should definitely contact some Native American tribe and get like the shaman or the shaman, however you pronounce that there.
Yeah.
And they should do some sort of a tribal ritual. Where do they play now? They don't play. Do they play at the Staples Center?
Yeah, they play Staples.
Yeah, they need to go in there and into the Clippers locker room, and they need to, you know, smoke a peace pipe or burn something. And definitely, I think it needs to be. They need to get the Great Spirit involved and expunge whatever demons are in there.
I think they might need to fly the whole team to Buffalo.
Maybe
do some sort of smoke
right,
circle.
An
or
apology.
Something.
Get a drum circle and an apology.
Yeah.
If I'm Blake Griffin and he's going to sign some astronomical contract, I'd spend a little money to hire like a Native American medicine man just to cover me at least.
That'd be cool if he traveled with one. Part of me was thinking if he read that and he read all that 6,000 words and everything that happened and realized that the odds were that stacked against him, that he's got to just think, all right, I got to do something. I can't just kind of blindly hope that this is going to work out. I need to proactively do stuff.
I'd go this far at the draft tomorrow night. I would not only have the medicine man with me, but I might come out and shake David Stern's hand with a Native American headdress on.
Do a raid dance.
Like the 15-button suit and the Native American headdress? Come on.
Yeah.
That'd be solid.
I mean, it's, yeah, I pointed this out in the column, but it's not like we haven't seen 25 movies where somebody messes with some sort of burial ground or something Indian-related.
Well, yeah.
Works
I mean,
out
you
terribly.
Mentioned Amityville Horror, but there's like Poltergeist. I think that was the premise for every horror movie, isn't it?
Yeah, usually it's like if they can't come up with a reason bad things are happening, they just throw, oh, yeah, the house was built on an ancient burial ground. Or,
right.
Or his great-grandson was killed by whoever and did it. But
the problem with that theory is that it kind of absolves their ownership and their management for 30 years of ineptitude.
It's a solid point. My counter would be that maybe that's why they have the owner and the management.
Well,
maybe
sure.
The gods decided Donald Sterling was the right guy to take over this team.
You can't fight the fates, you know, you can't fight your destiny. But, that's kind of like a nature versus nurture debate. What comes first, the ineptitude or the curse? You know, that's, I guess, that's sort of one of the eternal debates.
I think the weirdest thing as I was researching it was the fact that in 1976 they decided it made a ton of sense to move the Braves to Hollywood, Florida.
Yeah, that's just insanity.
I don't know where Hollywood, Florida is. What is that?
Not even like
what is it next to?
Not Miami and not Orlando or Tampa. Like, why Hollywood?
Well, where is Hollywood, Florida?
No idea. But I know it's like a small town. It's probably like a retirement community.
What a, I mean, that it's almost like in Slapshot when they were talking about moving the team to some weird Florida. The city of Florida, city of Hollywood, Florida official website. Doesn't look like
what's
it's
the population?
Near anything. Oh, it looks like it's near Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, all right.
It's between Fort Lauderdale and North Miami Beach. But why not go to Miami then?
Well, that's like, remember in the 80s when the San Francisco Giants were threatening to move? I think when they wanted to build a new stadium, it was the 90s. And yeah, they were going to move. This is before there was a Rays or a Devil Rays, and they were going to move to like they were going to move to Tampa. They were going to move to St. Petersburg.
Yep.
And be like the St. Petersburg Giants.
Yeah.
And then baseball or somebody stepped in and was like, just no, you're not. So it's like a similar thing, you know, like you're going to move to some small town. I mean, not that St. Petersburg is a small town, but I mean the famous town, the big town is Tampa.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a Twin Cities deal, I think, but Tampa's the big location.
When I was researching my book, I just came to the conclusion that in the 60s and 70s, I don't know what was going on, whether people were dumber or whether people were using more drugs and that resulted in some of the decisions or what, you know, what the reasons were. There had to be some reason, but people just did dumb things and had dumb ideas. That's the bottom line. Just a series of terrible ideas. And especially you saw it in sports. You know, the NBA expanded from 9 teams to like 17 in 4 years. And then the product suffered. And they're like, man, why is the product suffering? It's yeah, like you just doubled the size of your league, you idiots. But they did a million things like that. I always thought it was amazing it took them 8 years to come up with a shot clock.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Your professional basketball league and teams are stalling for the last 6 minutes. And they're like, how do we solve this? What do we do?
And the guy who came up with it, I just read an article about him. What was that in?
It was, I wrote it. It was the shot clock, the bowling alley guy.
Oh, yours? Oh, yeah. I really should pay more attention.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, about the guy that came up with the shot clock.
Yeah.
And it was pretty, and you know, it was just some, who was he, some random guy? Who did he coach, or the GM or somebody?
He was the owner.
The owner, that's right. I knew it was some random thing. It wasn't like, yeah, it wasn't like a coach, that's right.
He was the owner of Syracuse, and he owned a bowling alley.
That's right, the Syracuse Nationals, right?
He owned one bowling alley and somehow was able to buy an NBA team with the one bowling alley.
Well, the people used to bowl. That was big time back in the day. 50s and 60s, you could make some money owning the alley.
The weird thing, you know, like I was saying, like how dumb people were. You just like basic common sense things and for whatever reason, nobody asked them. Like, for instance, hold on, I'm just looking this up.
And why was it 24 seconds? That was interesting to me, too. You can tell this article made a big impact on me. I didn't remember that you wrote it,
yeah,
and I didn't remember who came up with it, and I knew there was something interesting about the 24 seconds. God, this is going to be fun when we do podcasts in 20 years, and neither of us remember anything. And now the Drew Report with Bill Simmons. You're going to be like, hello? What?
What was that again?
Bill, you're on.
What was that? I think the favorite thing I found out in my book was the Royals moved to Cincinnati, and they kept them in the Eastern Conference, which was whatever. They had Oscar Robertson. This is like 1962. They had Oscar Robertson in that conference. And so he's in the same conference with the Celtics. So then the next year, they add Baltimore as an expansion team. So at that point, this is great. Okay, we'll move Cincinnati to the West.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll have Oscar in the West, and he can play the Celtics in the finals. This is awesome. Now they kept Cincinnati in the East, and they moved Baltimore to the Western Conference.
Nice.
Even though Baltimore is like 1,000 miles closer to the East than
Cincinnati. Well, it's like what they did in the, that's like the NFL, where they kept the NFC East because they wanted everybody to play Dallas. And even though they were the Arizona Cardinals, they were in the NFC East.
Yeah, there's been a lot of map crimes. A lot of sports map crimes.
I mean, just because they want to have 2 games a year against the, you know, big-time team that's going to sell out.
I can understand that a little more because those games are worth so much money.
Right.
But
in basketball, you don't think so much, huh?
Yeah, not so much. Not when you're playing nine times a year. I also thought it was funny that when Buffalo was threatening to move to Florida, that the other owners were furious because of the travel costs. Like, really, what did the travel...
I don't understand that part of it. Like, how is it that much more expensive to fly to Florida than it was to fly to Buffalo?
Yeah, if it was 1932, but it was the mid-1970s. Florida, whoa, hey! It's like an extra hour.
I mean, there was an Atlanta Hawks at the time, so they already have to fly to Atlanta. How much farther is it to fly to Florida?
There is never enough. I could watch a whole documentary on how they decided to do that franchise swap. John Y. Brown, who's the Kentucky governor.
Right.
I don't know if he ran for Kentucky governor before or after. I think
now, he's the one that was married to Phyllis George, correct?
Yes, married to Phyllis George of NFL Today fame, and buys half of the Braves, and then eventually buys all of it, and then decides to basically switch franchises with the Celtics. And the Celtics owner takes the Braves and moves them to San Diego. But during, as they were debating this franchise swap, all of a sudden there were the nine-player trade materialized.
Yeah, that's incredible.
And Ren Arbeck had no idea. The guy owner's like, oh, yeah, it's part of the deal, and here's this nine-player trade I made. And Ren was like, what? He's like, almost had a coronary. And it really was 50-50 between those two picks, and the Clippers could end up getting Larry Bird.
Jesus.
But it's just kind of the way sports worked back then. These two guys probably went out and had five scotch and sodas
right.
and hashed out this nine-player franchise swap trade.
No GM with any knowledge of what's going actually on in the game had any clue what was up with that.
The stories have to be great. You want Marvin Barnes? Yeah, I'll take him. Well, then give me your 1983 second-round pick. All right, fine. Let's get a bill.
See, things were simpler back then. You couldn't do that, anything like that nowadays. With 85 sports channels and a million blogs, there's no chance.
I know. Chad Ford and I talked about that yesterday. Like, Chad is convinced that Memphis GM Chris Wallace is terrified to make a trade because he took such a beating for Pau Gasol because there's so many people with columns now and the internet, just immediate reactions and message boards that the stakes are so much higher screwing up. Back in the 70s, he could just make a terrible trade and that's it. They may talk about it on talk radio and some newspaper columnist might kill you. Now it's like this wave of people that just come after you like zombies.
If you're like, really, Chris Wallace is afraid to make a trade? Do you think that John from John and Kate Plus 8 is a little afraid to get married too? He's a little afraid to take his girlfriend for fertility treatments, you think?
How? I still haven't seen that show.
No, I've never seen it either.
I was flipping channels and it was on, and I watched like a minute of it. And on the bottom, it said, coming up, Little People. It's the show they have where the little people are married and they have like little kids.
Yeah. TLC, everyone.
Is TLC, is that where I go if my wife and I have one more kid and it ends up being like 7 tuplets and one of them has 5 arms. Like that's, I just call TLC and they give me a show.
There's worse things than the little people one and the Plus 8 one, because I've flipped the channels and seen a commercial for something like she's living with elephant man's disease. I'm not kidding. They had this woman like in England, she was getting out of a car and she's like got elephantitis of the legs. And I'm like, oh my God, I like recoiled. I'm like, people really want to tune in for a half hour to watch that?
Are you serious?
I swear. Look, you can Google it.
I thought elephantitis was like just that one guy who had elephantitis of the testicles.
I mean, they have people on there with like they had a show about a guy that had like elephant man disease, like John Merrick had, and then they had a one about this woman that has some awful like elephantitis of her legs. People want to tune in and watch that. TLC, there it is.
Is it called My Big Foot?
I don't know.
No, it really is.
Oh, it is.
Oh, it's called. Oh no, that would have been a good title.
Well, maybe that'll be the next one.
Do you know how to spell elephantitis?
No, E-L-E.
I did TLC elephantitis. Nothing came up. But you know what did come up? Elephantitis of the genitals.
How about try like TLC and like disease?
TLC disease?
See if they have like any shows about like or medical malformities or something.
How about giant leg?
Yeah,
TLC giant leg. By the way, I got to say Googling things is one of the more underrated things. Oh, here we go. The woman with giant legs.
There you go.
Let's see when this is on. Oh, it looks like it might be coming up soon. Downloading right now. Joe Mead.
Yes.
Have you seen The Woman with Giant Legs?
I have not. I've seen the conjoined twins.
Oh,
yeah,
that's another
that
one I enjoy.
Too. Yeah.
I like the conjoined twins. Well, I like that they both want to marry.
I like the show American Chopper, even though it's the same show every week. There they fight, and then they end up building a motorcycle, but I'm fascinated by it for some reason. So I often DVR it or watch it. And a couple weeks ago, they had a crossover thing where they made a motorcycle for John of John and Kate Plus Eight. And that was my first experience with John and Kate Plus Eight. And he just looked like what we used to talk about, like the New York subway face.
Yeah, yeah. Where he's tell that like, story. I mean, I guess it wouldn't make sense. But
well, we were on a New York subway once, and everybody on the train just looked like just so bummed out. You're like living in this enormous city. You're riding a subway. You've just worked all day, and yeah. You have like the New York. You don't want to make any eye contact with anyone else in the subway because there's a 95% chance they're insane or a criminal. So yeah. You just sit there and you have like this slumped look and this 1,000-yard stare. And I kept saying like everyone on the train looks like this. And I did my impersonation of just like slumping my whole body down and staring off into space.
I love that with the slight open mouth.
So we always talk about that when someone just looks like beaten down by like a girlfriend or a wife or life. We were like, geez, look at the New York subway face or like, if, you know, a quarterback
yeah, has
a concussion, you know, he's definitely got it because his wife, I guess, you know, is just a nightmare.
The show is called The Little Couple. And on June 20th, what day is today? Is today June 23rd? Tonight at 10 o'clock on The Little Couple. Bill's having a guy's weekend in Vegas for his brother's bachelor party, leaving Jen just a little nervous. She calls and texts him repeatedly until he finally stops answering, sending him into a panic. A guy's weekend in Vegas.
Wow.
That's fantastic. I don't know why I'm not TiVoing The Little Couple.
You know, they used to have another show on there about, like, a family, but this is just a couple, I guess. A family of little people.
I agree that John has the subway face. And, you know, I think one of the reasons that this couple has led the cover of Us Weekly for so many weeks in a row, I think it was like seven or eight, is I think that woman might be evil.
Yeah, I think she is.
She might be legitimately evil. Like, she might... There's something about, like, all the celebrities you can kind of bend around and say, they're probably not that bad.
But yeah.
You know, you read these stories and you're like, wow, this lady is an old school, like Faye Dunaway, Mommy Dearest, crazy person.
Right.
Just, using every move she makes on the show is so she can get something free, and she hates her husband. You know, she's just a miserable wretch to him behind the scenes.
And you know, he's not, it's bad enough that he's with her, and then you throw eight kids into the mix. I mean, that guy's got to be, like, suicidal.
Yeah.
I mean, well, the guy's made some questionable choices. I don't encourage cheating on your wife, but really, in his case, you can make a case for it.
Yeah.
By the way, I had to say that first sentence in case my wife tunes in. But no, you shouldn't cheat on your wife. But in his case, an argument could be made.
We have some new channel because they got rid of HDNet and all the Mark Cuban HD channels. Thank you again, Time Warner, for that. We had some channel on that shows documentaries. I think it's called like the Smithsonian HD channel. It's a weird name. But they had a whole documentary about Amityville Horror, whether it was real or not. I couldn't recommend it highly enough.
Really? I'm intrigued by that.
It really seems like they just made everything up.
You know, I've read that a lot of it was, that they wanted to sell some books.
Because what you don't realize, because all we see is the Margot Kidder, James Brolin. They left the house. They left everything in. They never went back. Black goo was coming out of the walls. The gateway to hell had been opened in the basement. The dog saved James Brolin. They leave the part out where people have been living in that house now for 30 years.
Yeah, it was no events.
People moved in like 4 months later. Yeah.
Yeah, no problems.
Come by our house for July 4th. Where you live? Oh, we're at the old Amityville Horror House.
My wife and I are looking to buy a house, and that's going to be one of the first questions I ask. There's not a gateway to hell in the basement, is there? Has anyone ever fled this house in the middle of the night?
See, my wife is the opposite. She's always wanted to live in a house where somebody has died and there's a ghost. I swear to God, women are crazy. I mean, let's not lie. Let's not sugarcoat it. Women are just nuts. And my wife is one of the women who's nuts and was like really deeply disappointed after we had been in our house for about a year. And she realized that we didn't have a ghost because the house was built in like 1924. And
right.
She was just thinking, oh, man.
Hoping some Hollywood actress like threw herself off the Hollywood sign or in the house.
Yeah.
Something happened in the house, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing. Nothing.
Huh?
And she's really disappointed. It's like, do you want a ghost?
Yeah.
You want a ghost in your house with two kids?
Yeah, that's not good.
The part that I've never been able to understand is why the dogs, like, why do dogs have the power to
see ghosts?
To see ghosts and, like, know that an earthquake's coming. But yet, I could put my wife on the phone and, you know, like, my wife's away right now. Put my wife on the phone next to one of the dogs, and they're just completely confused. Yeah, they know when an earthquake's coming.
Not to mention, if you're eating a bag of chips, the dog's just going to sit there, like, going, chip, chip, chip. So yeah. How can it focus on the ghosts and the earthquakes? Would it be always distracted by, like, a piece of bacon?
Takes them 3 years not to learn how to go to the bathroom in the house, but yet they can smell a tornado 1,000 miles away.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm buying that one either.
Nobody's ever figured out dogs.
No.
All right, Johnny, what are we this week?
Oh, God. 7.5, 8. I'll go 8.
8.
Well, there was a long pause there. I didn't know what the wheels were turning, huh?
I was trying to think what you should be. I mean, in my opinion, what you should be. And I don't know. I don't think you should be that high yet. I'd say 6.5. Because A-Rod hasn't gotten going yet. I guess the worry would be, will he ever get going?
Will he? Right. That's what I'm not sure of. Hoping for the strong second half. Maybe they'll make a little run. Who knows?
Somebody made a case that as a fantasy guy, he wouldn't be good this year, not just because of the injury, but because he wouldn't be able to get steals because of his hip. And it's kind of been borne out to be true.
Yeah, I don't think he has any steals. Maybe he has one or two at the most.
He's turned into, like, old late 30s guy.
Yeah.
No, he's not. But, like, he's killed a few teams. He hasn't won any favor in the fantasy world. Not a strong year for A-Rod in terms of building a fan base.
No, not at all. No, lustily booed pretty regularly.
You know what I would do if I was him to win the Yanks fans back over?
What's
charge
that?
The mound just over nothing and just beat the hell out of some 5'11 pitcher.
Against the Red Sox.
Yeah, it's like somebody, let's say, like, who could he beat up on the Red Sox?
Well, Dice K would have been perfect.
Dice K would have been a good one.
You don't want to go after Brad Penny. He's kind of a big guy.
Yeah,
you wouldn't want to go after tussle. You wouldn't want to go after Beckett because he's
no. Big. You don't want to fight Beckett.
You wouldn't want to go after Lester because the cancer thing. America would not really root for that.
You're a jerk if you.
And
go
you can't
after
go after John Smoltz. He's 50.
Yeah,
and you can't go after Wakefield for the same reason. So it might have to be like a relief pitcher, Del Carmen.
Nah, he's pretty big too.
Yeah, Papelbon. Yeah, I mean, if he went after Papelbon, Yankee fans would love that. But that's no gimme either.
Papelbon would be the great. I mean, that would be the hit or miss, swing for the fences move. Like, if he went to the mound and beat up Papelbon, I think he wins, like, a year with the Yankee fans.
What about if he, like, takes out Pedroia at second or something? They both jump up and get in each other's face.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, but then he'd take heat because Pedroia's too small.
Euclid
is good because I bet Euclid can't fight.
And people hate him.
And people don't like something where he steps on Euclid's foot and a close play in the bag and Euclid gives him a stare and A-Rod just jumps him.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be good.
A-Rod does the bar fight thing where if somebody looks at you cross-eyed, you just throw the first punch and worry about it later.
He just tells the first base coach, like, what he's going to do ahead of time. He'd be like, make sure you grab me quick.
Yeah, that was Adam's plan in the real world, Dylan. It didn't work. Punch CT. Yeah, I'll punch him. I'll get held back by 5 guys. It'll be over. He's running around half naked with 20 people chasing CT, and CT threatens to...
I watched the reunion show, and I showed that again, and you forget how bad that was. Like, it erased it from my memory, but it was really, like, awful.
It was, and they were like, yeah, and you guys didn't even see half of it.
You didn't see the bloody handprints on the wall.
Adam had total fear, and there's blood on the wall. Yeah, that's pretty good. We need to give CT a show.
Yeah. We really do. That American needs it.
All right, Jacko.
All right,
talk
buddy.
To you next week.
All right.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
All right, we're going to give my buddy House a quick ring. Diehard Wizards fan. Want to get his take on a pretty significant trade yesterday. The number 5 pick for Mike Miller and Randy Foy.
It's Joe House.
What's happening?
What is happening?
How are you feeling about the big trade?
The Wiz trade?
Yeah.
Pretty good. You know, this is a draft for a team like the Wizards where there's absolutely nothing with the exception of Blake Griffin that anybody could do to help. You know, there's only one player in the draft that could really, really help them immediately. And they have a window that's closing with the kind of age of their players where it makes sense to try and transmogrify the draft pick into somebody that can play right now.
Yeah.
So I'm fine with it for now.
My dad didn't like it. It's a bad sign for you. He's usually got a good S detector with this stuff.
On what basis?
He said Foy's a tweener and he's always hurt. Good point. You said Mike Miller hasn't been good for 2 years. Another great point.
Well, Mike Miller is irrelevant. It's really the fifth pick for Randy Foy. And my analysis, small a, on that point is there isn't anybody in the draft right now that with the exception of Blake Griffin, that's better than Randy Foy.
I disagree with that.
So who's better?
I mean, for me, it's like you downgrade a little from the five pick to Randy Foy, but on the flip side, you got rid of some bad contracts. The issue is the bad contracts were signed by the guy who also just made this trade to get rid of the bad contracts. I love the hypocrisy of that. Yeah, guys, we...
That's the NBA. What are you talking about?
Yeah, guys, we had to clear some of these bad contracts. I don't know who signed these guys. You did. You were the guy who signed them. That's what I don't get. I mean, he at the very least, he should be fired.
Why?
Grunfeld.
I understand, but why should he be fired?
Because he just made a trade. He just basically used the fifth pick in the draft to undo some of the bad picks and signings that he's made over the last couple of years. That's so like an admission that you're a failure.
No, they would say that Sangalia wasn't a failure, that they paid the right price for him.
He stinks.
I don't disagree with that. He does stink. You know that I...
He's your least favorite player. You went crazy that he played over
McGee right.
last year.
You're right. All that is 100% true. But, you know, he can come in and play backup to Al Jefferson out in Minnesota. He's probably the most useful piece of that trade. The thing that Grunfeld does deserve blame for is the terrible pick of the kid that will never play a meaningful game in the NBA.
The Russian did,
was terrible.
I do like Randy Foy. I don't feel the same as my dad. I do think that he has skills that translate to being on a good team. And he was a key part of the team when they were taking off right before Jefferson got hurt. He also, you know, he had a stretch second half of the season. He was basically shooting 40% from three.
It's fine. You know, I'm willing. I'll sort of put this out there. We can look at it a year from now or 2 years from now. Whoever gets picked fifth, just match up their career against Randy Foy's career. I'll take that wager.
Well, here is the thing that I worry about. If this league is stupid enough to let Rubio fall to five, then that trade's a disaster. I wouldn't have made that trade until I knew who was going to be there at five. And I think you could have made the trade just as easily on Thursday night, just said, hey, we're going to do this deal, but I just want to make sure that Stephen Curry or Rubio aren't going to be here at five.
Well, maybe Grunfeld already knows that.
How does he know that?
No, I mean, you know, they're based on the way teams are acting and behaving. Why does Stephen Curry need to be part of it? Why does he have to be available? Why would he be better than Randy Foy right now?
Because I think there's only four players in this draft worth a damn, and he's one of the four.
I know, but that's not saying very much. He couldn't do anything to help a terrible Davidson team. Why is he going to help the Wizards?
Yeah, but he was going against Box and one basically his whole career. I think if he's going to be able to shoot open jump shots, that's the thing. Playing with Arenas, he's going to create open shots for you. That's a guy that I think I would have really liked the Arenas Curry combo.
Yeah, I don't really take issue with you know, kind of eliminating the risk element. You know what you're going to get from Randy Foy. He's going to be a nice compliment. I think that there is a little bit of value to the idea of a new coach with an offensive mindset. You know, maybe that puts a little hop in Foy's step. Maybe even puts a little hop in Mike Miller's step.
Well, I'm looking at Miller's stats right now. His second half of the year, not terrible. I mean, just from shooting threes, that's basically all he can do at this point. And that's why I don't think people realize how much he's deteriorated as a player. He's basically Jason Capono at this point.
Right, that's right.
And of wildly overpaid Jason Capono. You mentioned something on the phone last night, though, that I thought made a lot of sense. The Mike Miller for Chris Kaman.
I would do that so fast. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. The Wizards have another move to make here because they're now really thin in the front court. So that would be sensational. I mean, I've always liked Kaman. I think the diagnosis that identified for him, that learning disability, has been a helpful thing for him, you know, helping him get focused and all of that. I thought he looked pretty good last year in a terrible situation.
And he looked good 2 years ago. I can't give you the last year.
Well, you saw him a lot more than I saw him last year.
He sucked last year.
Okay.
He was really good 2 years ago. I mean, he... Yeah, I thought he was almost untradeable. In 2007, 2008, he averaged 16 points, 12.7 rebounds a game.
Well, Eclipse agreed with you.
56 games.
Well, they signed him to that big contract.
Well, they had unfortunately signed him to that before he had done anything. It looked like for once they had done something right, and then last year, of course, he got hurt, played 31 games.
But, Randy Foy, by the way, played 70 games last year, so this knock on his injury proneness, you know.
Hey, that was my insane father saying that. Well, he only played 39 games in 2008. He missed 12 last year.
I know.
So, came in for Miller, I think, makes a lot of sense because then that solves the Clippers, their center logjam, gives them an expiring contract to get out of Kamen's deal. And then actually, you know, not inconceivable they'd have some money to spend after the season.
Well, and then that's a team. Kamen in the East is an interesting proposition. I mean, that's a team, that's a Wizards team that's immediately ready to get into the playoffs and try and make some noise.
I like Kamen in the East. I just think it's the right conference for him. He never totally fit in with the West. It's a little more, you know, moves a little faster in the West. The East, I think he could bang some bodies, take advantage of a couple other teams.
I mean, I guess it would be a concern here in Washington about whether or not Haywood get along with them, because Haywood and Eton Thomas famously did not get along. There was one of their fights involved Haywood pulling Eton Thomas by the dreadlocks.
That was one of my favorite feuds. They fought like four different times.
Yes,
didn't they?
Yes.
They just hated each other.
They did. They disliked one another.
All right. So let's say you trade Miller for Kamen. Kamen, Jameson, Caron Butler, Randy Foy, and Mike Miller. Oh, no, and Arenas.
And Arenas.
With Mike Miller as your sixth man.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Mike Miller's not on the team because you just traded him.
No, so then
Foy, Arenas, Butler, Kamen, Jameson. That's your crunch time five.
And then you have Haywood, Blotch, maybe Nick Young, although I wouldn't mind seeing him part of some deal somewhere along the way here.
Maybe you throw him to the Clippers and get Thornton back in my Kamen-Miller trade.
That would be fine. I would do that. That would be very fair. I like Thornton.
I don't think the Wizards are that far away now because they're not, they didn't go young with that pick, and because Arenas is back and they still have the Arenas, Jameson, Butler three.
And they're lining themselves up to maximize the team that they are, which is a team that needs to go score 130 points a game to win games.
Would you trade Jameson and Miller for Shaq?
No, because that's the diametric opposite. That's doing what Phoenix did. And it worked out so well for them.
I knew you wouldn't do that. I know you hate Shaq.
I don't hate him. I just think it was a bad move by Phoenix back when. I never thought it was a good idea. You tried to defend it.
Listen, if Duncan does make the three, they might be in the finals. I don't know what would happen. I think they certainly would probably do that trade again. Did you like my idea of the Knicks trading Eddie Curry and Jared Jeffries in the number 8 pick to Phoenix for Shaq?
Oh, I didn't see that.
You didn't, because I didn't tell it to you. I should have mentioned that. I didn't make you aware of that.
I'm trying to let me think about that. Why would the Knicks do it?
The Knicks would do that because then that would put them at like $5 for the summer of 2009.
Oh, I like
nobody
it.
Nobody
yeah.
on their cap. They basically
would be
able to create a new team, like a fantasy team.
I'm disappointed to have Eddie Curry out in New York because of the unintentional comedy he brings to the table. But
would you do it if you're Phoenix? You're taking $17 million worth of 2011 contracts, saving like $3 million this year, and you get the 8th pick out of it.
How much are they saving this year?
Like $3 million.
Yeah.
Probably not, right?
Probably not, yeah. It's not enough.
Yeah, the Knicks, this is the thing I don't understand with the Knicks. Everybody's talking about the summer of 2010, all that. Like, why would LeBron want to sign there to play with Danilo Gallinari and his bad back, and whoever this 8th pick's going to be? And they're not going to bring back David Lee, probably. And like, who's on that team? Why would he go there?
Yeah, that's right.
Makes more sense for him to go to Miami, right?
And
the
who
Clippers.
Will be? So who will be in Miami?
What about the Clippers?
Who? For LeBron?
LeBron could play with Barron, Blake Griffin, and Eric Gordon.
And Mike Miller.
And Mike Miller, Kamen Camp. I mean, you'd have some pieces in L.A.
That would be interesting. Then you would have L.A. You would have Kobe and LeBron in L.A. Kobe at the end, right?
That would be amazing.
It would be great.
They would probably triple the price of my tickets.
You know that I have to go to a meeting right now.
Yeah, you have to go.
Yeah.
All right, well, congrats on the Wiz. I'm sorry you don't have a pick, though, because it's never not fun not to have a draft pick.
Oh, I don't mind. We haven't had. I feel like we haven't had draft pick in years, and I can't remember the last time I was excited about a draft.
All right, well, we're going to call you after the draft next week.
Yeah, now I'm going to text you when Craig Stamen starts the infamous Craig Stamen starts the seventh inning with a no hitter against the Red Sox tonight.
Oh, I look forward to that.
Yeah.
All right. See you.
See ya.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
That concludes, ends, finishes, wraps up another BS Report. With all the talk about baseball, the upcoming football season, and hockey playoffs, Bill Simmons neglected to mention something which frankly cannot go unstated. Okay, here goes. For a limited time, hurry into Subway and enjoy the new Tuscan Chicken Melt. Lovely seasoned chicken, melted bubbly cheese with olive vinaigrette, piled so high with the crisp veggies you love on your choice of freshly baked bread. All that deliciousness with 9 grams of fat. It's part of a fresh fit meal.